Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
Today we're talking banks for rednecks, lotto lies, and the echo housing boom.
And this is not a bait and switch. I feel like folks are thinking, okay, they say they're going to talk about banks for rednecks. But no, in fact, Joel, you in particular, you came across this bank that's literally called Redneck Bank.
It really is.
You want to tell folks what they're offering?
Well, first off, everybody who's listening to this has to go visit the website. This is not an advertisement. You have to see it for your own two eyes. It's like Larry the Cable Guy, who has coding skills, made this landing page.
It does
page.
Have like GeoCities-esque mixed with like Larry the Cable Guy / Jeff Foxworthy.
There's a donkey
They got together to make a bank.
And there's a fake fly that you kind of think is like a fly that landed on your computer screen. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. But this is a real bank.
But the reason you came across it is because they're offering a pretty killer rate right now on their high yield savings.
Wallet Hub acknowledged that Redneck Bank currently has the highest rewards checking rate in the country.
You can get paid. Wait, it was on checking?
Yeah, on checking.
Oh my gosh.
I
thought it was on savings.
5.15 on up to $15,000.
That's impressive.
But are you willing to trade off all of your dignity to open a checking account?
So they've actually got an app too. Did you see that? They've got a Redneck Bank app.
I didn't download it.
Apple for Android as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're out there, bud.
Okay. So just heads up, like you might find the highest rates in the most inconspicuous places, including a bank I thought was a joke.
Would you do it if you were looking for a new online bank that was offering a killer rate?
Probably not. I mean, you and I have talked about neobanks in the past, and I'd prefer to do business with a full-fledged bank.
This is the real bank, though. That's what's crazy.
No, they have a partner bank.
If you go down, Redneck Bank is the digital division of evidently All America Bank,
okay,
which is based in Oklahoma.
Okay, so it's not a neobank.
So I don't think it was too far for their, I don't think it was a stretch for them maybe to be like, oh yeah, we can do the Redneck Bank. But I love it, dude. I mean, obviously it's a gimmick. It's ridiculous. But the fact that something like that can exist, because within banking, normally what do you think of? It's just like dudes
stodgy
in suits. It's really stiff. It's really boring. And the fact that they had the guts to go out on a limb and say, hey, let's make the Redneck Bank, I think that's awesome. Personally,
what's next? Hipster bank?
Sure. Or like the New Yorker Bank, you know, or the Harvard Business Review Bank, with something that's like the polar opposite of a redneck, I guess. But I love that you have the possibility of both of those to potentially exist and to perhaps even thrive here in our great country.
Yeah.
I think America.
Ultimately, what it comes down to, I guess, I could probably get over the weirdness with the name and the website if everything else is good, if the customer service is great, and if the rate is solid. And in this case, the rate's solid.
I think the customer service is pretty good, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I think less redneck, and I think more like Cracker Barrel, which feels very, like, very warm and welcoming. They're like, you want a biscuit? Sure. Right. Okay, come on. Okay, instead of giving out candy, when you go to make a deposit, maybe what if they're giving out, like, collards and cornbread?
There you go. Well, the slogan... Or banking's funner, which adorable. Okay, so Redneck Bank.
I dig it.
Not a joke, really exists.
Yep, that was our first Friday Flight story where we cover truly what we think are the best headlines, best news stories from this past week.
And that was just the most interesting we saw.
How they pertain to your personal finances. But yeah, that was a legit story.
All right, let's get to the real, real stuff though, Matt.
That was a real story.
It is real.
I just said it's a real story and then you call it fake story.
But that's like more like poking fun. And
this isn't fake news, Joel.
Making you aware of something, but let's get to the stuff that hopefully is going to inform you. And then we'll have provide takeaways to help you with your personal finances. Question of the day is, would you go into debt to have more fun this year? Matt, I'm guessing your answer to that would be
no.
Okay.
Won't do it.
Same. Okay. This question, though, was posed to a recent slew of folks in a Bankrate survey. And sadly, we're used to this in the United States of America at this point. More than a third of folks said, sure, why not? 38% of folks, to be exact. And there were three categories that people said they'd take on debt for in varying amounts. They were dining out, live entertainment, and travel. And Matt, the risky willingness to go into debt for fun experiences, it's been even more normalized for younger folks, the millennials and Gen Z in particular, like pulled at higher levels. They're willing to spend money they don't actually have to do fun stuff. I think this is partly revenge spending hangover, but really what you're getting is revenge on your future self when you go into debt for this stuff, right? This is a reflection, in my estimation, of the YOLO mentality and an inability to see the financial needs of future you. It's always easier to get into debt than it is to get out. And it always seems, I think, less risky when you're young, but paying for those fun experiences for years to come with interest added on top, especially if you're using credit cards with a lot of interest added on top, that really is just, it's a crappy way to live.
That's true, man. Yeah, so speaking of fun, going on a cruise, that sounds like a good time, right? That sounds like fun, even though it's something that neither you nor I have ever done.
Still haven't done it.
Obviously, don't put it on a credit card. Of course, don't go into debt to go on that cruise. But do consider going standby to spend less on that excursion. A friend of the show, Elaine Glusak, she wrote about this in The Times, how you can pay substantially less if you're willing to perhaps even risk missing the boat. You can cut your cruise price in half or even more by being able to move at a moment's notice. This is through Holland America. Not everyone has this sort of flexibility, but we love that you can cruise for what she reported was $49 a night plus fees.
Yeah.
And you can do this if you've got an incredibly flexible, limber schedule. And that's going to mean you're going to pay rock bottom prices for travel. But dude, this might be my favorite story from the entire Friday Flight because of the ability, especially if you're a retiree, if you have flexible work, if you can work from home, the ability to, within 20, or I think it was 48 hours perhaps, yeah, to be able to be like, all right, I'm there. They've got locations. So this cruise line, they go out of West Coast and East Coast. So
on the
West
Coast,
Seattle, San Diego, on the East Coast, what do you call it? Port of departure? I don't know. I don't know the cruise terms. But they're leaving out of Boston, out of Fort Lauderdale. I think that's awesome. I think if you have the flexibility to be able to take advantage of deals like this, it's huge. And they go out of Alaska as well. So maybe that's how you'll finally get your glacier calving vibes in.
Well, you can do the Alaska cruise departing from Seattle, which I thought was great. So,
yeah. I don't know what city it was that they're leaving out of actual Alaska as well. But either way, it's a legit cruise line, and it makes me really happy to know that there are folks who are able to be super flexible, pounce on a deal like that, and enjoy it.
Think of how cheap that excursion is.
For such little money.
You're talking normally with a hotel room, $165 a night or something like that. Yeah. This is like your entertainment and your lodging all in one for $49 a night. Granted, you got to be like flexible, like you said, Matt, but I agree. That's a great deal. Let's talk about something that might not be a great deal, and that's using your phone as your wallet. And this is something that, I don't know, we're in our early 40s. And so we were maybe late adopters to this game, but it seems like everybody's paying with their phone these days. And it's quicker. It's more frictionless. It's convenient, but that extreme level of convenience, it makes it easier to spend more money, apparently.
Are you not using Apple Pay on your
iPhone? I do sometimes, not all the time. Like, it just depends.
Oh, I love it.
I love Tap to Pay with the credit card, though, too.
I just like having having the phone handy.
Yeah, I gotta get one of the two out of my pocket anyway, so yeah. I don't know. But I didn't realize that apparently people are spending more, almost 10% more per transaction. That's according to a recent NPR article, when they use their smartphone. And so I don't think the right answer is to go back to a flip phone, although I don't know, that could probably help our lives in a lot of ways. But it's amazing how certain ingrained habits can impact the way that we spend money. Matt, you and I were not Luddites. Technology is not the enemy here, but it's about what tech allows us to do that doesn't serve our own best interest that I think we're talking about here.
It's true.
You just have to be careful. If you find yourself, we've talked about this before, spending on a credit card versus spending with cash, different generations feel different ways about that. Some people think, well, I've got cash, that's free money. Other people think of cash as like hard currency, and they think of their credit card
something,
as free money.
Something physical that you're being parted with.
Yeah. I think so much depends on your perspective, mm-hmm. and maybe even just like the age cohort that you're in. But if you find yourself spending more money by tapping with your phone, if that feels like free money or something like that, then I don't know, you might want to find a more painful way to pay so that you don't get too loose with your spending.
Totally agree. Yeah, I completely agree. And I see how it's even more frictionless. Because for me, like as I was thinking, you're talking about tapping to pay. And I picture, like what I still have to do is I still have to reach in my pocket, pull out my wallet, then reach into my wallet and pull out my card. Whereas my phone, it's always just in my pocket, right? Mm-hmm. Like I never have a credit card just floating in my pocket. So for me, it's even more frictionless. But personally, I don't think I spend more using my phone versus using a credit card or another form of payment.
You call it NPR liars, huh?
It's just, again, it depends on how you view, how you frame your expenses and the stuff that you're buying. Joel, let's talk about housing because Fast Company, they published an excellent article about what they're calling the echo housing boom. And what they mean by that is as home values have risen, property taxes in most states, they have not kept pace. So over the past 4 years, national home prices, they've risen something like 40%, while national property taxes have only risen 21%. And so why the discrepancy? Well, even though home values aren't going up at the same pace they were, you might be shocked when you get your tax bill in the mail this year as local municipalities, they're playing catch up. And so
yeah, they notice the discrepancy now.
Yes. And even as it was happening, they're probably like, all right, that's going to mean more money in our coffers.
It's like a delay cycle, essentially, right?
What'd you say?
It's like a delay cycle,
yes.
Right? So they're not like right on top of the pulse, but they're like two beats behind.
Yeah. So it's good news, right? Like, hooray for having more equity, your house being worth more. But just be prepared for a growing tax bill that is going to impact your monthly payment.
Yeah, start preparing for sure. Like, don't let that come as a shock. Start preparing for an increased monthly payment now. By the way, Matt, you called it the Echo housing boom. Do you remember the Sega game Echo the Dolphin?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so makes me think of two things. At some point, you and I can't remember if we're talking about it on the show or just in real life, but we're talking about the Sega handheld that was color you could play at night. Just remembered it. It's called Game Gear.
Oh.
But also, my friend George, I'm pretty sure he had that dolphin. The
on
Dolphin
game
on his Game Gear.
It was a classic.
Man, so many feelings are rushing back.
Well, okay, but what you're referencing, though, the Echo housing boom, this is at least part of the reason why you and I, why we don't hold home ownership out to be this panacea, this brilliant personal finance move that anybody who wants to be good with their money has to buy a home, has to own their own home. Taxes and insurance, which Axios just called the stealth inflation driver insurance, which is true, right?
If
you look at the recent numbers, and we've talked about this before, maintenance costs as well, those can be hard to predict. Matt, I just incurred on one rental property more than $6,000 of expenses, new HVAC, new water heater, all in one fell swoop. Ooh. That's the kind of stuff I'm prepared. I have enough money in savings, but I'm also kind of not prepared mentally for that, right? Like,
Yeah,
it's a lot
to replace something that doesn't look. It's just like, all right, cool. Here's the ability for your house to continue on just like it was when you bought it.
That's right. Yeah. No updates.
Like, yeah, no added benefit.
No fancy new, like, granite countertops or anything like that. But those phantomish costs can, like, just significantly impact the financial brilliance or lack thereof of buying a home. And it's just another reason to not buy a home, by the way, at the top of your price range. Because the mortgage company might say, hey, here's how much you can afford. Congratulations. And then you might find yourself out over your skis. Leave some money in savings, of course, and some extra wiggle room for increased costs you're going to incur down the line. When you buy a home at the top of your price range, like, man, that's just a tough way to live, trying to make that mortgage payment every single month when you're kind of at the limit already.
Yeah. Well, while we're talking about mortgage rates, let's give ourselves a little small pat on the back real quick, because we talked about this term, date the rate. So marry the house, date the rate.
Yep. A lot of people were saying that for
a lot of folks were saying that. We felt that it was garbage. We felt like it was bad advice. We said so at the time because it certainly looked like rates might come down. Jay Powell, the Fed, they even said so. They said that there were going to be rate cuts coming, expect three rate cuts in 2024.
Maybe even more.
Maybe. Yeah. But that being said, inflation, we touched on this last week, it's remained stubborn and sticky. And with that being the case, these cuts are less likely. And our advice was to not count your chickens before they hatch. Basically, if you can't afford the home for long with the rate that you currently have now, we don't think that you can afford the home, even if somebody else, like your lender or your real estate agent, is telling you, hey, you can easily refi down the road.
You see those like sweet projections. Oh, guess what? In 18 months, mortgage rates are going to be down to 5.5%. And so you're going to save a point. Like, think about how much that's going to reduce your monthly mortgage payment. And if that pans out, congratulations. But if it doesn't, you're screwed.
We were incredibly cautious about that whole philosophy when it came to home buying, because like if you zoom out and you look, so the Fed, they started tracking 30-year mortgage rates back in 1971. And if you zoom out, you can see that for like a solid 30 years up until around 2000, 30-year mortgage rates were at 7% or higher. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until about 2000 that they dipped below that 7% mark. It wasn't until the Great Recession around like 08, 09 did rates drop down significantly beyond lower than 5%, right? It's like 5, 4, 3%. So basically what we're pointing to is the fact that we've had a pretty nice low interest rate, low mortgage rate run over the past 10 years.
Some might call it an anomaly.
And I do think that that's the case, man. Like it's the stickier that inflation becomes and the fact that rates are staying where they are, it makes me realize that, man, this really could be the new normal. I wouldn't necessarily count on rates. I mean, they might dip a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, like rates might get lower, but I think folks just need to start thinking through that, like this might actually be the reality, and we need to make sure that the decisions that we're making with our personal finances in the here and now, that they reflect the current reality.
Higher for longer, probably going to be the case. And the great news is out there for savers. Redneck Bank, Matt, might start offering even higher rates because of this. Who knows? But I think that really is because savers got screwed for so long, and it's at least nice to see savers in a non-crummy environment. But yeah, mortgage rates, what's going to happen with those? Anybody's guess. Just continually don't bank. Don't let anyone tell you rates are going to go down. You're going to be able to save a lot of money on your monthly payment next week, next month. Only buy the home if you can afford the payment as currently constructed. And Matt, Yahoo had an article this week about just how sticky low mortgage rates are for folks. I mean, we've known this. They're kind of like golden handcuffs. Hey, I've got a 3% mortgage. Yeah, you're not going to get me to leave my house for any reason. But people are so attached to their incredible mortgage rates that they're turning down more lucrative job offers in other locations. That's because they'd have to give up a ridiculously low mortgage rate and reasonable monthly payments. And by leaving that behind and going elsewhere, that means they'd be ramping up their housing costs significantly to take that superior job. Of course, like a $20,000 raise. Sounds nice. Sounds awesome. But not if you're giving up those other things necessarily, right?
Yeah, that's
true. You could easily end up in a worse overall financial position. It's kind of crazy to think about. But it is something else you have to consider if you're in the market for another job. What's the total compensation here? And how is that switch going to impact your monthly budget? If you've got the home you bought for $300,000 and you got a 3% mortgage rate and that extra income would be nice, but you're talking about, oh, now it's going to cost me $700,000 to buy a home at a 7% rate, trade-off might not be worth it.
That's true. You got to look at the entire picture, which is why it's always so helpful to zoom out and to consider not only what you're making, but what you're likely to be spending. But Joel, we've got more to get to. After the break, we're going to talk about money dysmorphia, what that is, how we can combat that, and more right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. All right, we're back. The Friday flight continues. Promise, no more references to Redneck Bank unless they start sponsoring the show, which they are welcome to because the rates are great. But Matt, let's get to the ludicrous headline of the week.
For banking's funner.
Exactly. This one comes...
That's the other part too. Like anytime they said banking, it wasn't banking. It was like banking.
There's no
the
G.
apostrophe at the end. Yeah.
You gotta love it. Okay, so this ludicrous headline comes from the website formerly known as Twitter, from a finance dude named Charlie Bellello. I read his newsletter every week, and he said, Americans spent over $113 billion on lottery tickets last year, more than they spent on movies, books, concerts, and sports tickets combined. What, sobering statistic, Matt?
That's, yeah, impressive.
Not what I would have guessed. I would not have thought that our collective lottery addiction was that out of whack. I've heard some folks try to rationalize this. They've said that the poorest Americans who play the lottery the most, they don't have other options. I guess I just don't buy that argument, though. I think like buying even just a few lottery tickets a week, it adds up. And we talk about micro investing and how, yeah, it's not the panacea, but small little bits here and there. And guess what? Over time, it's going to make a difference. And so if this is something you do for fun with your coworkers and when the jackpot soars, you do you. If it's factored into your entertainment budget, fine. Like, no judgment here. But I would personally rather spend my money on the three other categories he mentioned. I guess it was four. Movies, books, concerts, sports tickets. I'd rather do all of the above than play the lottery. And again, not trying to be some prudish judgmental type over here. But my goodness, when you think about that as a line item and just what that means in individual people's lives, that's not nothing.
That's true. By the way, Jeff Sommer over at the Times, he wrote an article calling out the BS marketing tactics that lotteries play. And here's what he had to say. This is a quote from that story. The advertised numbers have swelled while the real value of the current lottery prizes isn't even half that much. And that's before taking the bite of taxes into account. Basically, the lotteries are they're framing the jackpots that they've got there like they're massive. But the cash value is actually less than half of what they claim. It's only it's something like the 30-year annuitized value that might actually be that high. That is the headline number, but those hefty numbers. And then the subsequent news segments about these massive jackpots, they just feed the beast. They feed the machine, right? It's like a turbocharger for lotteries, which encourages more people to play and to purchase more tickets. And lotteries, man, they're run by state agencies, which are apparently exempt from truth in advertising laws. And this allows them to, I think, make misleading or more likely what we can just call false claims. But basically, the headline number isn't what it's all cracked up to be, essentially. It's only if you stick around for the annual payments. And that's because of, it's based, I guess, on 10-year treasury notes. And because rates are higher there,
that's
essentially
right.
They're able to inflate the advertised jackpot amount,
yeah,
which is discouraging.
Which, I mean, makes it more frothy, makes people more excited to play the lottery because they see the headline number, not realizing that the headline number, well, once you dig into the fine print, it's not nearly as good as it seems.
Yeah.
Just another reason not to play the lottery. And Matt, makes me think of sports gambling. The first basketball player got kicked out of the NBA for gambling on sports this week. I mean, we're going to see more and more of that.
Which I think is great.
That he got kicked out or that he was gambling?
No, that he got kicked out.
Agreed.
Well, because it just helps to maintain the integrity of the game, right? Because if word starts getting around that, like, oh man, there's guys out there. If it's like the, what is it? Speaking of current events and sports, is it in China, the three African runners? I think there's like two or three of them running alongside a Chinese runner.
They slowed down.
And at the last second, it's so obvious.
Blatant.
That they just like hit the brakes and let him win. And I'm sure there is some sort of.
They literally did the hand wave. He was crazy.
Which, you know, maybe you call it sportsmanship, or maybe you call it, we're doing this to save our lives, be able to escape this country.
I don't think that's what they call it in an authoritarian society, but...
Yeah, well, another thing I was thinking about, too, when it comes to the lottery, like, the statistically speaking, it's your chances of winning are so small, right? But there is a part of me that when I look at the numbers, I think, but if you don't buy any ticket, it's statistically impossible to win. There is a part
that's
of me.
That's the wrong line of reasoning.
That is, for me, who, like, if I'm looking at the data and I'm looking at the numbers, I think, all right, I literally have no chance of winning unless I buy one ticket. And even though the chances are incredibly slim, there's a part of me that just wants to go out there, get the one ticket. That way, okay, I'm in. I'm not going to win, most likely. But you've got, like, literally zero chance of winning if you don't actually buy a single ticket.
Your microphone privileges have been revoked for the next 5 minutes.
I'm just saying.
Like, this is exactly the kind of mentality I'm trying to combat over here.
It's hard for me just from a logical, data-driven approach. It's like, buy one ticket, and that's it. And then just step back. Get back.
Every time, or what?
Well, I don't know.
See, that's what I'm talking about, is these little bits.
Whenever you get excited about the jackpot getting larger, always divide it by two, perhaps, because that's, in fact, the actual... cash prize
if
amount.
You look at the other numbers, they basically say that you have a 1 in 300 and something million chance of winning,
but like literally you have a 0% chance if you don't actually spend the $5.
Let's move on. All right,
this is for all the credit card optimizers out there. If you think like I do, this is just something to chew on.
I'm guessing they disagree with you and they side with me, but if you do agree with Matt, send us an email. I'd love to hear your reasoning and if it has as little basis in reality as Matt's does. Okay, one reason I think Matt...
Numbers is numbers, Joel.
So that's what the Redneck Bank says. One reason I think so many people play the lottery is because they aren't content with their circumstances, right? They're comparing themselves to others and it feels like they're behind. And there's more evidence that's come out recently that comparing ourselves to others is just really, really bad for us. And this was a new survey from Credit Karma found that almost half of adults struggle with what they call money dysmorphia. Body dysmorphia, that's a literal mental health definition when people are overly concerned with how they look. They notice flaws that no one else sees. Matt, we've known somebody like that who thinks that a freckle on their skin or something is marring to their physique or something like that. And it's like, nobody else has even noticed that. Well, the money version is a brand new term, and it's referring to how people feel about their financial status compared to their peers. It's often not because they're actually behind, because Credit Karma found that many of those who experience money dysmorphia have above average savings, in fact. The real issue is avoiding comparison. Obviously, easier said than done. It's hard, especially in age of connectedness and social media apps. But the study also found that the more time we spend on social media, the worse we feel. And so I don't know, the answer, I guess, is to delete the apps, reduce the time we spend on them at least. And then my guess is that a lot of folks will start to feel a whole lot less self-conscious about their money situation, allowing them to make more progress with their finances. And maybe, just maybe, surround yourself with people who have better money habits and who are encouraging you to do the right things with your money. You're going to be more like the people you spend the most time with. And that's just another plug for the How to Money Facebook group too. People who are trying to do the right thing, encouraging each other in the right direction. Join that if you need a little inspiration and a little encouragement in your financial life.
Totally. So you talking about deleting the apps makes me think about just cell phones in general. And I mentioned maybe like a couple months ago that I was thinking about, or maybe it was a couple weeks ago, that I was thinking about just removing this my iPhone from my bedroom completely to see if I sleep better. I totally have done that, by the way.
And
I'm using my watch because, hey, guess what? Your watch, you can set an alarm with your watch. Dude, it's awesome. I highly recommend it.
Sleeping better?
I have 100% been sleeping better because
I've been
of that.
Taking magnesium pills to sleep better.
Oh my gosh.
That's what my friend Tim says, but he's probably wrong.
Wait, you've actually been doing it or your friend's doing it?
No, he told me to. I did.
And are you sleeping better?
Eh, it hasn't done anything yet. It's been like 3 nights, so maybe it's something to build.
This is like one of those things where there's like different cycles of different things that are popular.
That's popular right now.
I feel like...
I don't trust any of it.
I feel like magnesium is just like one of the new ones.
I don't trust any of it. I don't trust any of the pills or the vitamins, so I'm shocked that... Or really many of them. But like, I'm shocked that I even did it.
Take the frugal route. You don't need supplements. Yeah. Just remove the phone from the room.
Okay.
You're less tempted to doom scroll. And I've got to think that there's some sort of... Yeah, this is weird that we're like kind of going off topic here, but like there's the active part of scrolling and knowing that you're wasting time, right? So there's that part of it. There's like the blue light where you're kind of like stimulated before you go to bed. So that probably doesn't help. I also think there's this sort of subconsciousness, like knowing that it's far, that it's further away, even though it's just like, well, I'm not thinking while I sleep. But that being said, I do think it has an impact. Yeah. So anyway.
Well, I think it's almost like the, when you, we've all had this at this point because we're also addicted to our phones, like the phantom buzz in our pocket. We think that our phone buzzed and it didn't.
You know, what's funny is I'm actually getting that with my watch.
Are
now.
You really?
Because yeah. Well, we don't have smartwatches. You and I both have the same Garmin watch. Does yours buzz when it, literally mine just did it.
Did it just buzz
It just
right
says
now?
Move.
Oh, really?
That is unreal.
No, mine doesn't
it's
do
like
that.
I sensed it or something like that. Okay, so like the default is like every, if you've been, if you haven't moved, it buzzes like that and tells you to move. And
I think
so
I turned that setting off.
Oh, it's so funny. I can't believe it just literally happened while we're talking
mine
about it.
Mine will buzz when I hit a goal that I have for that day.
Like a, step,
like a certain amount of steps step or, goal, yeah, or something
I've
like that.
I've got that. Yeah. It changes every day though. I don't understand that. Should we end up cutting all this out?
No.
Maybe.
People want to hear this.
Let's keep talking about retirement. And speaking of big jackpot-like numbers, evidently $1.46 million, that is how much Americans say that they're going to need to retire. This amount has grown by 50% since 2019. It's grown $200,000 from last year.
Boy, and we're ramping up our expectations quickly.
Well, I think what the show is it isn't even that inflation has made everything cost more, although that is a factor. But more than anything, dude, I think it reveals a lot of anxiety about how much money it's going to take to retire comfortably. And we just talked about this when it came to the money dysmorphia. But I think we just have an inability to curb what it is that we think is going to make us happy. I more than anything else, and whether it's us comparing via social media, like what other people are buying, the stuff that they're putting in their homes, the kind of cars that they're driving, the types of vacations that they're going on, man. Again, the ability to be happy and content with what we have, it doesn't just apply to like the YOLO 20-something-year-olds who are willing to go into debt in order to travel or and have whatever fun that they're looking to have. It also applies to retirees as they're looking ahead, thinking into their golden, quote-unquote, golden years. And I think that has an impact on them, too.
Yeah.
I think they're thinking, oh, man, well, do you see so-and-so and so-and-so? And they're like, you know, somebody they went to high school with that they haven't talked to in 20 years, but they still are friends with them on Facebook. And they're saying, well, they're doing this thing for 2 weeks in Cabo and blah, blah, blah. And it just expands, I think, what folks who are closer to retirement age, what they think is necessary in order for them to be happy as well. So it impacts everybody.
I think you're spot on at identifying, putting your finger on anxiety being the problem. Because when we don't know what the answer is, we just like kind of doom extrapolate. And I guess I probably need 5 million. You know, like you just think that
it's the scarcity mindset. It's just always more.
Yeah,
you know, like
exactly.
Like it's not like if there's a dollar. It's not informed by data. It's just thinking that, well, what I have isn't enough. And so the goalposts keep moving. Even if you did decide on a dollar amount and you are a financial nerd and you've got it figured out in your financial spreadsheet, if you are constantly comparing yourselves to others and seeing what other folks are doing, well, you're going to change that number because you used to be happy with, let's just make sure we have $950K in there. Then you, we're up to the $1 million mark. Now you're at 1.1. Now you're at 1.46.
You're never satisfied.
You're never satisfied.
A la Alexander Hamilton. Yeah, and I think that sort of focus on a gargantuan number can take your eye off the things you have more control over, like your savings rate, being consistent, paying off debt. And so I think that part of what breeds anxiety is a focus on the things we can't control. And it becomes like an out of control cycle. We're spinning. And so the only way, at least part of the way to rein that back in is to say, let me focus on the things that I actually touch every day. So part of that is being a little more frugal. It's finding ways to save money in your current budget so that you can toss more into those retirement accounts, but so you have more financial breathing room, more margin in your life too. And maybe going back to social media, it's not like the cause of all of our ills in society, but the more we're on there, I think the more we're prompted not just to spend on the ad that pops in front of us, but we're prompted all just to spend more because we see what other people are doing. We're comparing our lives to others and we feel like we got to up our game.
Yeah. So friend of the show, Allison Schrager, she wrote about that in Bloomberg this week. Part of the anxiety comes from drawing down funds and the volatility of the market, because that is something that you cannot control. This poses a problem for retirees. And she mentions annuities as a guaranteed income solution to this problem, but she also acknowledges the high costs and the opaque features of annuities. And I think the only real solution is just like you dollar cost averaged into the market when it came to building your wealth, that same principle applies when it comes to taking money out of the market. And I know, Joel, you and I were not retirees, and so it is much easier said than done for us to kick back as 40-year-olds. I'm 41. But and to say, well, you gotta grin and bear it, man. You have to stomach it. I still think that that solution is going to be better than paying higher fees that are not necessary when it comes to, you are paying a price for certainty. That decrease in volatility, yes, and for that certainty. And so, I don't know. Like, on one hand, you could say, well, you can combat that by saving more and more and more, and then you end up like the 1.46 million stat, right, where it feels like, ugh. I know I said 1.46 last year, but like it's more like 1.5 this year. And then there's like the one more year syndrome. There's the golden handcuffs. There are these things that keeps us working longer than I think maybe we could be working if you've got other goals that you want to pursue.
And I think frugality and flexibility are two weapons in your arsenal to help you combat, one, needing more and more and more in the savings. And then it also just allows you to kind of move with the punches, roll with the punches when, let's say, the market does experience a down year, because it's going to happen, right? Like, sorry, if you've only been investing for the past like 14 months, you haven't experienced any punches yet. Like, but they're going to come. Like, the market doesn't just go up in perpetuity all the time.
Yeah, and that's when, instead of taking that like 2-month-long European vacation, you watch Holland America and look for the standby deals, and that's your amazing vacation.
That's your flexibility.
You're gonna take that summer. Yes. Basically, when you are in your prime earning years, you are relatively money rich, time poor, right? And as a retiree, You're feeling a little more money poor because you're kind of like, all right,
the paycheck's not there.
Yeah, the paycheck is not coming in. You want to make sure that you're able to stretch your dollar, but you do have a lot of time on hand. Again, that's why that flexibility and being able to pounce on a deal like that. I just love the scrappiness that comes with being able to vacation for really cheap, potentially to go on an awesome cruise.
Isn't that exactly what Jillian said in this past week's episode? On Wednesday.
As opposed to like shoehorning a vacation into like this perfect 1 week period when prices might be where you might be paying out the nose.
Okay, and by the way, I think it's just worth mentioning, Vanguard reports that younger generations are doing better than their elders. They're starting younger, which gives them a big leg up in building wealth. So we keep hearing the term retirement crisis, and I think the term crisis just gets overused. I don't know that we're actually in a retirement crisis. I think a lot of these things are solvable, and I think a lot of these things are solvable at the individual level. All right. On that note, Barron's wrote an article about the uptick in flat fee advisors, which is something we like to see. It's being called advice only, right? And it's the direction we point most people in if they feel like they need one-on-one help from a financial pro. Not all fees are created equal, though. So like reading this article and seeing what some advisors charge, it can be shocking to see even just what their flat fee might run. Many charge thousands of dollars a year to be your financial advisor. It might even be as much as like 15 grand for a year, which is a lot of money.
Seems a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a bit steep, man.
Right.
Just saying.
I'm not trying to hate, but that's still too expensive for most ordinary people, and it robs them of the funds they need to funnel into investments for their future. And that's why we like the hourly rate model when you have money questions, not just a flat annual fee, although there's nothing wrong with that, I guess, if you feel like that's the best way to go for you. But going the DIY route with your investments, but then always being able to pay for an hour of somebody's time if you visit a site like hellonectarine.com or something like that, that I think is a superior route. And don't forget about robo-advisors like Betterment too. Just, we realize that sometimes the confirmation or the nitty-gritty financial question you might have might need or might be best addressed by someone who has passed the CFP exam. But I think especially for younger folks, Matt, who are just, the whole goal is to really funnel more into low-cost index funds because they've got decades for that money to grow. That's actually a simple thing to figure out. And so most folks in that stage of their life, man, they don't even need a flat fee advisor. They might just want to schedule like an hour or two to chat with somebody who knows more than they do.
That's right, man. And for everyone out there, make sure that you are subscribed to the How to Money newsletter, which comes out every Tuesday morning. A quick referral shout out to Jay McBlain as well as A. Arias. Thank you all so much for referring the newsletter along to some friends,
by the
or
way,
families, or even enemies of y'all's.
Frenemies. And Matt, we're actually about to hit next week a pretty sweet newsletter anniversary. 2 years of the newsletter.
Anniversary.
And we're going to do a giveaway. So if you haven't signed up, sign up so you can be a part of that. We might be giving away a lot of How to Money socks. Just let me know.
It's going to be raining socks.
That's right. Raining.
That's right. That's going to be it for this episode, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.